this morning with the sundown shining in.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know... That's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Now let's cut to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
You talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the
Well, welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Ricky on the board. SB Futures up 3, NASDAQ Futures up 26. A little bit of a pause in the rally yesterday. I don't think we're going to have a pause today. As we continue to have the stocks that we have Mr. Flanagan with us or no?
I don't see him, Mr. Flanagan, in the meeting, Chief.
All right, well, it's just you and me then, bud.
Understood.
He may call in. He may not.
Yeah, I'll be on the lookout, man.
We have the Meta. Meta's up 575. We got Tesla up 405. Ricky, why don't you go down to Mar-a-Lago and kiss Trump's ass, and we'll buy stocks in you.
You know, I wish, but I'm busy at work. You know, working for Stocks and Jocks and everything.
there you go.
Yeah.
So what do you think? They found this guy allegedly who killed this. The CEO in Altoona, Pennsylvania, of all places.
I read about that. Yeah, do we know about like the backstory of this guy? Does he have like a testimony yet, or no?
Funny you should mention that. Evidently, comes from a prominent family in Baltimore. Altoona is a huge railroad town. It's like a crossing spot for the Pennsylvania Railroad. So it is a lot of people came from Altoona. Evidently, all that they know is that he has chronic back problems.
The shooter?
Yeah.
Okay.
So that because they interviewed a roommate of his, and saw that.
And
last
that's
night.
How that's how does it, that's I, how they could get out of him. Yeah, well, he's got back problems.
Well, that the roommate said he had like really serious back problems, and
okay,
maybe he evidently he had his manifesto against. I'm guessing that in his mind, this is totally off the wall, that whatever procedures he needed done for his back, maybe people were slow or whatever it was. I mean, I don't know what. And this will all come out, but it seems like that's the only connection with a 26-year-old guy with a drug company is he had back issues. Normally, 26-year-old people, I mean, hopefully, most don't have any problems. But, you know, I mean, nobody has no problems, but nothing you would ever get pissed off at a drug company about. Or an insurance company. So something must have tipped his head somehow. I mean, I don't know whether he needed a procedure and they didn't pay. Who the hell knows? But maybe we will find out. It seems a little harsh, but one thing that's weird here, it says that the gun and the silencer were 3D printed. I didn't think you... Does that mean they're plastic?
Well, actually, I think there are some other, like, 3D printers that you can print, like, with other materials and stuff, but that's, like, that's still quite impressive, man. It says right here that he's Luigi Nicolas Mangione, and he's 26 years old and an Ivy League graduate.
What school did it say?
I'm trying to find it right now, but I don't see... it doesn't say, actually... So that he was arrested at a McDonald's.
Yeah. Well, wow. You know, I didn't think he'd last that long with his face out there because, you know, people recognize people.
Yeah.
Especially as the picture was all over. Pretty scary stuff.
Yeah, frankly, yeah. But isn't this like a regular thing in big cities, you know? You know, people
being shot.
Well,
hopefully not too regular. Well, people getting that. Not the people that are not supposed to get shot, unless you're just in the way of the bullet, which a lot of people are. Nobody cares about them. You know,
yeah, I see what you're saying. I see what you're saying.
I mean, I think America is stunning in what resources police can bring to bear when they feel like it.
Mm-hmm.
But how do you get them to feel like it if it's just a regular murder? They don't feel like it.
Yeah. Well, you know. They apparently care now. They care today.
Yeah, they cared for this guy.
I've seen that the media kept like, I mean, I guess maybe just one side of the media, they kept like kind of like like talking up this guy, you know, being like he was a very skilled shooter, you know, very skilled hitman or whatever, you know, and apparently like everybody was talking that way. I just thought it was some crazy stuff, man. I mean, I really do need to do my more research on like who the CEO is.
He was the CEO of United Healthcare, which is like the biggest insurance company.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I mean, it's a serious deal.
Yeah, so that, is that why people are getting like so... I don't know. I've seen like a lot of people getting happy about this, you know, like being like, yeah, about this the United Healthcare CEO. And it's, yeah, I just think it's absolutely crazy, man.
Well, the Kevin says that he just texted in that we can, 3D printers can use some metals and metal right. alloys. I mean, I don't think you're going to get... you know, a stainless steel Colt out of a thing, but right. but you're going to get, you know, I guess evidently you get something, but...
Apparently, yeah.
But no, I mean, United Healthcare is huge, and they make, you know, millions and millions of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, their revenue is, I mean, I use those guys, you know, so it's...
Yeah.
But I mean, it's, you know, they're not afraid to charge, and, you know, I mean, that's just the way it is. It's, mm-hmm. But, you know, I mean, And a lot of people, I mean, it's, how can I put it this way? The outpouring of people that are somewhat are happy this guy got hit.
Yeah.
You know, it's. I think in America, and hopefully it'll change before you get older, we have this idea that, you know, I've been tooting this for a long time, and I don't know if people, maybe they think I'm right or not, but I think I'm right. When you have an economy that's really not growing, when I was growing up, all these guys came back from World War II. They were all veterans. A lot of people were veterans. Everybody took part in the Great War.
Uh-huh.
Well, the Great War was World War I, but the Great War was World War II for here. And if you lived in a neighborhood, everybody was sort of in the same boat. If anybody went to college, they probably went on the GI Bill. You didn't have too many people, certainly in my neighborhood, that went to college like on their own.
Mm-hmm.
You might have had a few, but not very many. And everybody had a job where you could, you afforded the bungalow and you afforded the car, you know, and the wife maybe did something on the side, but it was, everybody kind of was growing at, you know, 3% a year. And the economy was growing. Every year, your paycheck was a little bigger, your mortgage payment was a little less, that kind of thing. And nobody really, well, I won't say nobody, but most people were not really pissed off at the person who was doing 5% a year. Because you could say, well, gee, you know, Joe works Saturdays and I play golf. Or there was some sort of a rationale to where somebody did a little bit better than you. You know what I'm saying?
Uh-huh.
So nobody really begrudged anybody. And the people who somehow landed in a spot where they did like exceptionally better, they just caught with a firm that did well, but they never lorded it over anybody else. I mean, we had a neighbor, one of the guys who did exceptionally, this poor guy, imagine this, this had to be 19, oh hell, in the 60s. The dude had a lung taken out for cancer. I mean, God, I can't imagine somebody taking your lung out in 1960 something. But he could have bought and sold three or four other people, but he never had anything other than afford. He lived in a house where his wife and her sister, they lived next door to each other. But they each had kids that were just like, you know, they were cousins, but they were like brothers and sisters. They put an addition on the house instead of move, that kind of thing. They put it upstairs. But the guy never made it, unless you knew, like my stepfather was pretty bright and he was doing pretty well too. You know, he knew this guy's name was Bob. He knew Bob could easily have had two Cadillacs in the driveway if he wanted to. Back when Cadillacs were the big deal,
yeah.
But he didn't. I mean, no. It's but then when you have a situation where the place sort of isn't growing, like this isn't growing here, for most people, all of a sudden you see somebody making gazillions of dollars. Your instinct is the reason why this guy's doing so much better than me is because this insurance company is bleeping me, which they are. I mean,
right.
I mean, they're not competitive. They make way more than probably they ought to, and they seem to control prices. They tell people no. It's an amazing, you know, and it seems like they enjoy it sometimes when they do it. So there's this incredible bitterness towards people who, I use the term, are making the 25 mil a year versus other people, because they really don't feel they earned it. They don't feel their company's competitive. It's not, you know, There's a lot of resentment in society right now that you didn't used to have. And it's right there. I mean, I'm not saying anybody should go shoot anybody because of it. I clearly would never say that.
Right.
But people are sort of pissed, and it gets personal. You know, it gets very personal. Look at how much people think. I mean, Donald Trump, for instance, has all these court cases.
Yeah.
Now, I think, you know, the guy's been kind of sleazy along the way. Doesn't mean he can't be a really good president if he gets the right people around him. I'm sure hoping for that because we could use one. Because the last two, including him, haven't been so hot. But that doesn't mean he can't do good this time, and I'm hoping for him. And it looks to me like he's got a pretty good group. He got a couple of clunkers around him, but most of the time, most of these people look pretty good. I don't know whether he's guilty or innocent. I do know that for you to get charged, somebody has to have a hair up their ass to charge you, unless it's a murder. I mean, stuff happens all over the place.
Yeah.
And nobody charges anybody, all of a sudden they do. But what I'll say about this is I don't care, even if you don't like the guy, nobody in my mind in this country could possibly have, your government should not be able to run up a $40 million legal bill on a citizen, for God's sake. And that's what the guys,
that kind of felt like a witch hunt, huh?
Well, even if it's just way too, I mean, there's no way, I mean, I don't think, I could never survive a federal indictment in terms of right. money. In terms of money,
yeah.
I mean, I don't know any of my friends that have done very, very well in life. Maybe they've got, you know, $15 million. I don't see how you can survive a federal indictment. I mean, the justice system doesn't work for anybody who thinks the justice system works for you. Boy, you haven't been in it. I mean, I've been expert witness in arbitrations, and I've seen some. You know, I talk to all kinds of attorneys about stuff that happens to them, and it's. Anybody who thinks this system is fair for the every person has never been in there. How long can somebody pay some lawyer $1,000 an hour and have five guys in there in court to defend yourself because somebody felt like charging you? And who's got that kind of dough?
Right, yeah.
I mean, it absolutely does not. I mean, in my opinion, maybe it used to at some point. But right now, look at the difference between the attorneys doing the big-time work and just like regular guys. You know, representing policemen or representing people in traffic or they're not making any dough. It's the big guys, you know, it's the society right now is not correct. It's not my America. I mean, the schools, Notre Dame, $75,000. Sorry. You know, and that's the place, you know, I went and I love. What I used to love. Right. We've all of a sudden become this incredible two-tier society that most people that's not why they're here. It's not America, but somehow it is right now. I mean, look at the fate of regular people. When actually, I'll read this from you. This is a thing that was John Flanagan. He was supposed to come on today and talk about it. This is a quote. I won't tell you who the quote's from.
Okay.
But it's where is it here? It's talking about the. Inflation being really a crisis in government, and here's a guy that most people don't have a good feelings for, Lenin, Vladimir Lenin. Remember that name from the Russians?
Yeah, I think it kind of rings a bell.
Well, he was the guy who essentially started the Communist Party in Russia. He and Trotsky and a couple of Lou knows more about this stuff than me, but
gotcha.
Lenin is said to have declared. Lenin, according to Armin Hammer, if you heard that name. Armin Hammer was, he ended up being, not Armin Hammer, the baking soda. Armin Hammer, the guy who owned Occidental Petroleum. He lived to like 90-something. He knew all these guys. He said his two most intelligent people he ever met in the world were Lenin and Roosevelt. Anyway, he says, Lenin is said to have declared that the best way to destroy the capitalist system was to debauch the currency. By a continuing process of inflation, governments can confiscate, secretly and unobserved, an important part of the wealth of their citizens. By this method, they not only confiscate, but they confiscate arbitrarily. And while the process impoverishes many, it actually enriches some. We've seen that, right? The sight of the arbitrary rearrangement of riches strikes not only at the security, but also at the confidence and the equity of the existing distribution of wealth. Those to whom the system brings windfalls, beyond their deserts and even beyond their expectations of desires, read insurance companies, become profiteers. Or the object of the hatred of the bourgeois, We just saw a guy get shot because he was hated, right?
Mm-hmm.
Whom the inflation has impoverished, not less than that of the proletariat. As the inflation proceeds and the real value of the currency fluctuates wildly from month to month, all permanent relations between debtors and creditors, which form the ultimate foundation of capitalism, become so utterly disordered as to be almost meaningless. And the process of wealth getting degenerates into a gamble and a lottery. The guy must have said this in 1916.
Mm-hmm.
How true is that today?
Yeah, no, definitely, man. It's crazy. You know, it seems like there's there keeps to be a pattern, you know, in history that we just keep repeating it, you know?
Well, because people with... It doesn't remain fair. Some people get all the somehow find a way to get all the money through government intervention, through mm-hmm. monopolies. I have a question for you. We've been going through this difference between the. I mean, you're not usually on it. Well, you were on Friday with Carl. We're talking about the difference between the household surveys and the establishment surveys.
Okay.
Establishment surveys, the one you, the big thing you see on TV. That if you have three jobs and they call all three places, you're counted three times. If they call your house and your wife says, yeah, Ricky's working, you're counted once, even if you have three jobs.
Mm-hmm.
How many people do you know, your gang, your posse?
Yeah.
What's the average number of jobs people have? I mean, obviously Matt Byrne was on yesterday. He works for the station. He does some stuff for us, and he has a third place too, doesn't he?
Yeah, Matt Byrne. He's a beast, man. He's one of the unusual ones. You know, I would say that he's got, yeah. I think it's about like three jobs or so. Shout out to Matt Byrne. But he, yeah, I would say that probably it would be like one, maybe two. I have not heard of like people my age having like more than two jobs. Really,
how many people have two? You have two.
I got I got two. I haven't really heard of like many people doing that, you know. At least at least my age, you know. I do have some other friends that are older.
But you guys are going to school too.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, that's true. I do have some other friends though that again are my age and everything, and they're not going to school, but they're just doing the one job, you know. Some have a good paying job, a good enough paying job. Some others just live at home and they just want to like work that one job and stuff. I guess it's kind of different for everybody, you know. I would say though that there's no, you know, it's not usual, you know, for people to be that ambitious, you know, to be having like, okay, I'm gonna make this this amount of money, I'm gonna fill up my time with this amount of work, you know. I think people my age are more like focused on making sure they have free time, you know.
You're only young once. I mean, what the hell?
Yeah, no, definitely, yeah, for sure.
I mean, you hear from Nancy was on yesterday, and you know she does all the mortgage work.
Mm-hmm.
She says the couples now that are buying a home and have a couple of kids, especially they want to put the kids in some of these, you know, travel teams on baseball and hockey and whatever, that costs a fortune. She goes, most houses, both people are working, and probably one of them has a side gig.
Mm-hmm.
Where if one's an accountant, they're doing tax returns in the spring or something. They might not be doing it every week, but somebody's doing something else. To even if it's just to pay for the, you know, for the extra sports stuff or whatever. But we're about as far as we can go. Two and a half jobs a family is about as, you know, when you're still trying to be a mother and a father, for God's sake.
Yeah, definitely, man. It's not ideal, for sure. Hopefully it'll change though, right? I mean,
I didn't know anybody. I won't say I didn't know anybody, but in our hood, which was a lower middle class Irish area.
Okay.
Mostly Irish, not everybody. There were a few Italians in there and a few other people. but it was virtually the guy worked. We had one car. And if the wife worked, there's a couple people that had, you know, had a little beauty salon in the back of the house with, you know, a couple things where they could do a few people's hair a couple days a week or something. A little extra cash. Or some of the ladies taught at the school, but they, you know, they were able to walk. You know, it was only a couple blocks. They'd walk like with their kids and go home for lunch, so even though they didn't make a whole lot, the expenses of doing it were next to nothing.
Yeah.
So you had a lot of those ancillary little things going on, but I don't really know. I didn't really know anybody who's the wife actually got out the door in the morning and worked with the hubby. Because most people had, well, we only had two kids. Most people had more than that.
Yeah, man, that's like the American dream, you know. I mean, I think it's I think that's the. I guess the ideal way, you know. I mean, you want to have like maybe just like one income, you know, for you to handle and take care of your family and stuff, you know. It's just sadly not the case anymore. At least that's what it seems like, right?
Well, but it also it involves other people as you you know, as you, I don't want to go into this too deep, but it, as you look at the economy and how you count the GDP,
mm-hmm.
it gets different. For instance, if you and I were had a farm next to each other, and even the two of us, say we didn't even like each other, but we happen to like each other, but even if we didn't,
mm-hmm.
I might figure out, this Ricky guy, I can't stand him. But by the way, he sure seems to handle his cows way better than I do mine. But I'm way better at growing the corn than he is. You know, we might make a deal where, hey, how about I give you some corn and you give me some milk or something along those lines.
Uh-huh.
Now none of that's counted, all right? Because there's no cash changing hands. None of that's counted. All of a sudden, one day we decide, okay, I got so much corn and you got so much milk. You're going to sell it to a milk guy, and I'm going to sell the corn to the guy who has the grain co-op. And now I have to go to the store and buy the milk, and you got to buy the corn. All right, so well now that enters the economic. Now that transaction's counted because I'm buying the milk, and you're selling it. I'm buying it, and then I'm selling the corn, and you're buying the corn. Where before it was just a barter type of thing. So when you have families, and it wasn't always, pretty much in those days it was always, but not always. You know, the guy's working and the lady's taking care of the family and maybe doing something else on the side. Well, you know, taking care of a family is a job, right?
Yeah.
It's a big job. I mean, most of the guys are real happy to go off to work and let the wife do all the rest. I mean, to be honest with you, I think out of the two jobs, that was the toughest one.
Right.
But people did it. Now all of a sudden, if she says or he says, usually she, if she says, well, you know what, I have a degree too, and I'm going to go work as well, but now we're going to have to pay somebody else to stay during the day and watch the kids. Well, now her job, I'm going to say her, was not counted, but now all of a sudden, if she goes and gets a job and pays somebody else, now. The minding of those kids is now a paid for job. When before it wasn't counted, it still was a job. But
yeah.
There were people at the CBUE, ladies that were terrific in the marketing department. I mean, they were making, this is in the 90s. I'll take a stab, Ricky, and say they were making 55.
Hmm.
Because they were high level ladies. I mean, they were able to go to shows and do presentations. I mean, we're not talking about entry level stuff. They were really sharp.
Right.
And but one lady told me, well, by the time But you always had to look good, so you have good clothes, right? You had to get to work on the train, or you have a car to get you to the train. So you needed at least a jalopy to get you to the train, and they didn't want to drive a jalopy. And they paid somebody at home. And the one lady said, I'm barely break even. By the time I get my check, I pay my taxes. I have to have the clothes. I got to get lunch. I need the train ticket. I need a car, and I'm paying the lady at home $30,000 a year to watch the kids. Or 25, or whatever the hell the rate was. She goes, I'm up about 10 or 15, but it's what I want to do, and blah, blah, blah. And it worked out for them, and it's fine. But now all of a sudden, all this stuff is counted, right?
Yeah.
So whenever you look at all these economic numbers, you got to sit back and say, okay, who's counting what where? And like I say, the idea of now we're counting, everybody's got three jobs, and we're celebrating it versus... people who are able to carry the load on one job, that's a whole different calculation, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, definitely, man.
Anyway, do we need to go to break? And then we'll have Joel?
Yeah, for sure.
S&P futures up 4, NASDAQ is up 43. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks. Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. As you all know, the broad markets, especially tech, have been hot for a while. Lots of reasons. New technology, small fixed income returns, a lot of Fed cash, maybe some good management. Recently, however, the rates on fixed income investments, even U.S. Treasury, have risen from the very low levels. Treasuries are more attractive. There might even be some interesting bonds out there. Also, the bull run has some leading stocks with historically high valuations, maybe making long-only positions a little riskier. So what to do? I think the answer is flexibility. The market may keep going higher. It may not. It could even go down. Is fixed income a thought for some part of the portfolio? Rates are not zero anymore. You may want to protect some gains. Think about some rebalancing. Address some growing concentration issues. Maybe thinking about commodities. We at PTI may have a solution just right for you. Open an account at PTI Pro Direct, PTI's online trading platform using the Interactive Broker high-end platform. There you will find competitive rates and solid execution across all product lines and traditionally high interest on money balances. In addition, at any time you can seamlessly decide for fixed income investments, to access Dan Janitas at Kratos Capital for management services. Dan and his team work tirelessly to achieve the highest returns they can, whatever risk category you are comfortable with. You can also quickly access my team for investment services and a wide array of investment strategies on the security or commodity side, protective strategies, concentration issues, or straight long. In one place, you'll be able to be flexible and ride whatever the future market holds with people you are used to hearing and trusting every day. Need help? You got it. Don't need help? That's okay, too. You'll have a great self-management platform with help always available. This market can change on a dime. I believe, like everyone else, having the right people there if needed is the way to go. Call me at 312-663-4310 or email me at time@ptisecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. Ricky on the board. S&P futures up 475. We've got the NASDAQ futures up 48, as usual. We had a down day yesterday. We're coming right back today. The stocks that are doing it, you got it. Meta up $6. Google up 567, and Tesla up 380. Keep motoring along here, but that's what they do. A Dow futures actually down 17, so not. Well, I wouldn't. Let me see in the Dow what we have going here. Got Boeing up $1.66. Caterpillar down 340. We've got IBM down $1.32, nothing crazy. McDonald's down $1.87, even though McDonald's guy fingered the shooter. Nike, Microsoft down $1.48, so nothing crazy going on in there. Let's see what's going on over in Europe. In Europe, we've got DAX is up 13, call that flat. FTSE up down 41.5%. Kekeron down 52.5%, so generally a little weaker over there, but not bad. Nikkei up 207, again up 0.5%. Hang Seng down 102.5%. Shanghai up 20.6%. They keep saying they're going to another stimulus pledge, more money in there, try and pump that market up, which is what they're trying to do. Yesterday, again, we're down a little bit. Dow was down 240, S&P down 37, NASDAQ down 123, pretty much down most of the day. No craziness on the close or anything. We've got oil down 29 cents, 68.08. Brent down 28 cents, 71.86. Natural gas down 6 cents, 311. RBOB unchanged, 195. We've got gold, which rallied some yesterday. Up a little bit again today. Up 1320, 26.99. Perilously close to that 2700 number. Silver down 7 cents, 32.53. Copper down 2 cents, 424. Foreign exchange. Dollar's up a little bit, just a little bit against the euro. It's at 105.2. The pound, 127.4. So very little bit. Japanese yen, though, continues to slide. 151.58, and remember, that's 151.58 yen to the dollar, so this is figured the wrong way. When that goes up, it means the yen's going down. And we've got Bitcoin up 773, 97,385. Is it made it to 100,000 yesterday, then backed off pretty quick, but now it's creeping up again. A lot of stuff there. What do you got for us, Trevi Weather Sports?
Morning, Chief. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Yeah, there we go. Good morning, Chief. It's currently 6:34 a.m. here in beautiful Chicago. We're looking at around 36 degrees right now with a high of 37. Mostly cloudy and colder. Tonight will be with low clouds with a low of 26 degrees. Let's go to Phoenix, Arizona. 48 degrees right now with a high of, give me 1 second with discharges, high of 66. Plenty of sun today, and tonight will be partly cloudy and chilly with a low of 40 degrees. Let's go over to traffic in Chicago. We're looking at inbound Kennedy from Monroe's. We're looking at 25 minutes. Inbound Innes from Lane Cook, 43 minutes. Inbound Eisenhower from Wolf, we got 27 minutes. Inbound Dan Ryan from 95th, 18 minutes. And Stevenson from I-294 to the Dan Ryan is another 23 minutes. Let's go to sports. NFL Week 15 is on the way. Thursday, December 12th, we got the Rams at 49ers at 7:15 p.m. Sunday, December 15th, we got Patriots at Cardinals at 3:25 p.m. And Monday, December 16th, we got Bears at Vikings at 7 p.m. No Bulls game for the next few days in the NBA.
Thank God.
Yeah. But then we also have the NHL. Yesterday, the Blackhawks beat the Rangers, which is good. Back over to you, Chief.
We have Joel.
Yeah, good morning, Chief. Hopping in here right at 7:35. How you doing
today?
How
you doing, bud? I'm doing fine. It's a little chilly, but we're going to hang in there. We're okay.
Hey, congrats to your Fighting Irish. I mean, I don't understand the seating. I've heard a lot of different things. Some people are like, oh, the College Football Committee did a good job. And then other people are like, they didn't do a good job. So, I don't know. What do you think, Chief?
I think the Alabama and Miami are sniveling.
They're what?
Sniveling. What did you say?
Yeah, I mean, You know, I thought early in the year, I talked to a couple buddies of mine. I'm like, you know what? A three-loss team may get in, but they didn't. And do you see who Michigan drew in their bowl game?
Yeah, they're playing Alabama, right?
I know.
Yeah.
I know. I guess it's going to come down to who has the most players sitting out. And right now, Vegas thinks that Michigan is going to have more players sit out because Bama is 11.5-point favorite.
One of the things I brought up yesterday, and I guess most people don't, you know, I didn't until I talked to my cousin, even these teams in the playoffs are going to have people leaving through the portal before the games.
I saw that with Arizona State. Did you
a couple guys on
was
Ohio
there someone
State.
Else? A
couple guys on Ohio State, from what I understand.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. Brown. I don't know, Chief. I mean, you and I have been talking about this for years, and it's I don't know. Not even in the pros do you do stuff like that. I mean, it's out of control, and it's not going to change. But you know, we've agreed. It's all about the money. And just think, man, look how many games they added. Look how much more revenue these universities. And by keeping the conference championship as a number one seed, then you keep the importance of the conference championship game. I mean, what are they going to go to? I mean, they're basically in a pro schedule right now.
You know,
the 12 teams.
You might be one of the few people off the top of your head, without thinking too clearly or getting your Google, if you go to your conference champion and lose and claw your way back to the national championship game, how many games is that after your 12-game season?
Run that by me one more time.
If you go to, say, Penn State.
Okay.
If they make it back to the championship game, how many games will that be after their 12-game season?
12, and then wasn't it 13 because they were in the Big Ten championship?
Okay, but I'm saying how many after the season?
17? 16?
It'll be 5 after the season.
Oh, jeez.
Not against, you know, Miami of Ohio. I'm not saying anything bad about them. It's going to be against real serious teams, 5 games in a row. How many young players are set up for that after a season like this?
I think your point is well made here. That's why these guys are probably opting out, going into the portal, not putting the wear and tear. I mean, some of these guys weren't going to play anyways.
Right. Well, yeah. But, you know, how do you know after 5 more games who's going to be out there? How many people are going to get hurt?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's some good matchups there. I mean, Indiana, Notre Dame. I mean,
it's already
you going to go to that, Chief?
No, it's sold out on a Friday night. $250 a ticket. $250 a ticket for the good seats. So, if you're family of four, it's got to be, by the time you drive there, pay for the parking, pay for everything, it's got to be a $2,500 night. It's if you don't stay over. That's a lot.
Hmm. That is a lot of money. That is a lot of money. But, Chief, I'll send you an email, but before I'm out next week, taking the week off, but I'll send you guys an email to remind you. Markets, I mean, path of least resistance higher, quad witch expiration. I mean, slow and steady, even that sell-off yesterday. I mean, if you were short, it seems like there were bids at every level.
Yeah,
You know, Google making a big big move today, up a couple percent. Up 3.5% on quantum computing. No, I mean, no stopping this market. The only thing that's stopping it, you got CPI, PPI on tomorrow and Thursday, and you know, maybe a quad witch turn, but what a run in year end run in this market.
Well, the articles are starting to pile out. I was quoting from one earlier. We're right back into this inflationary spiral, which should keep pushing the market higher, right? I mean, everything is going to go up, including the market, except maybe your salary. So I mean, we're right back into this inflationary spiral from before, and I joke about it all the time, but what exactly is Trump promising these big firms? Ever since he started talking to them, they've had nothing but go up. Is he promising them no antitrust? Is he promising them full speed ahead? What's he promising them?
The moon?
Evidently.
Yeah.
And what's Tesla up? I mean, I just wonder. 100%. I mean, since The guy's got, he's hooked into government more than in probably any other business, and now he's, and he got $9.2 billion for the electric car stuff and essentially in subsidies, and now he's working for the what is he? now he's working part time for the government, firing other people. It almost seems like it's kind of an odd dream. I don't want to wake up or something. Joel, you ever heard anything like that?
What you said is exactly true. A lot of people, credit his internet. I mean, you're not even talking about SpaceX either.
No.
Yeah. I mean, there's no doubt, the technical and... I mean, who wouldn't want to be best friends with the president? No matter who it is.
Well, especially the president that likes to deal. And I'm not saying that's a good or bad thing. He likes to deal.
Yeah.
I'd rather be his buddy than Joe Biden's. I don't think Joe knew that. He wasn't as much of a business guy. How much being involved with the government makes your business go up? Good Lord. Anyway, who's your predictor in this thing? I'm going to say Alabama and Michigan are both going to lose a bunch of players because these guys got to be out of there and be set up for their new school, right?
Oh, boy. I mean... Don't get me started because we only got a minute or two left here. Michigan has a top five cornerback that got hit in the fifth game of the season against Illinois. He has a hurt toe. Okay? He's not going to play. Colston Loveland's not going to. I mean, would you play?
No.
I mean, we have four or five guys that are going to be first-round draft choices or second or even third in the NFL. Everyone gets paid. I mean, why would you go out there and, risk injury? I mean, these bowl games, I mean, it's just such a far cry from, what they used to be. And we're probably sounding like old broken records here. But obviously, they think Bama is going to have, less players sit out, or the players that are remaining are better than Michigan. I mean, look at it. I mean, Ohio State gave us that game. It's not exactly like we went out there. And, I think Davis Warren was like 6 for 15 or something like that. The only reason was we smashed him in the mouth. Now, I don't know if we're going to be able to do that against Alabama. But, or as far as winning it overall, I mean, Oregon, as good as money can buy. Good team, good quarterback, good defense. I mean, Penn State, yeah, they hung in there. The score was a closer game. I mean, I don't know. I don't know much about the Irish.
They've got a really good defense, and their offensive line's getting better, and they got two halfbacks that are out of this world. Quarterback can run, and he can't throw.
How about that that Brian Kelly? Who's the coach now in Notre Dame?
Freeman.
Marcus Freeman, yeah. Right? How about that upgrade?
Well, he's been learning. When he started out, he was a good coach. He wasn't a good head coach. He's getting better.
Yep.
He's definitely going up the learning curve, and he's way more likable than I tell you. One of the guys, an African American guy, who runs the club I go to here. It used to be a bunch of people, now is not because no traders around. He says to me, "Hey, now that I know that you went to Notre Dame, I really probably can't even like you." And I go, "Why? What do you got against Notre Dame?" He goes, "They gave us Kelly."
I think you mentioned that time.
I go, "Hey, you guys bought him away from us. It's your fault. Thank you very much." But anyway, so you won't be next week, but are you here with us Christmas Eve?
I will be here, Chris. I wouldn't miss Christmas Eve day with you or New Year's Eve day with you. I'm getting the R&R out a little bit early, and ending the year, let's just keep the market going here and just see what these inflation, I mean, we're even getting a quarter point interest rate cut here. I mean, what more could you ask for, Chief? Just Goldilocks market. I'm signing out for today.
All right, bud, you take care. SP Futures up 5, NASDAQ Futures up 47. Do we have Kenny?
We do not have him just yet.
Well, he'll probably pile in, and if not, we'll...
For sure. Do we want to go on a quick break, maybe?
Yeah, we'll go for a real quick break, and hopefully we'll be back. SP Futures up 5, NASDAQ Futures up 48. Be right back.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here.
The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Well, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. Ricky on the board. SP Futures up 5. NASDAQ Futures up 47. I think I used to have that album, Ricky. Neil Young.
Neil Young?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm using your database, man. This is all your taste.
Well, not mine. It'll be Matt Weber's, probably.
Oh, Matt Weber's? Oh, okay. Well, there you go.
You're assuming that I could put a song in there? I couldn't begin to work something over there.
I just thought it was your taste, you know? I mean, it's the Stocks and Jocks show, you know?
Well, the only time I ever had one put in there is when we... Now, we do it every day, so we did get really boring. We play... when an all-time high happens every once in a while, we play the all-time high from the Bond movies. But now it happens every day, so...
Yeah.
So it would get a little old. Although, I never get tired of looking at Sheena Easton. That's not a good
thing. Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's a cool thing. So Mr. Kenny, or we got him?
Yeah, we got him.
How are you, bud? How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing all right. Are you home? Are you in Boston? Or are you at Mar-a-Lago?
No, I'm in Florida, but funny you say that. I'm going to Boston tomorrow because I'm speaking at a Fidelity conference on Thursday, and then I'll be back.
All right, I thought you were at Mar-a-Lago.
No, I'm not. No, I'm not.
Now, that's the conference you want to be in.
Yeah, I know. Tell me about it. I hear you.
It's not untoward that stuff like that happens when somebody gets elected. Matter of fact, it's probably fairly usual.
Yeah.
Probably the most amazing part of it in history was when Roosevelt got elected. I don't know how much you've read about that era, Kenny. Probably more than me, but obviously the guy couldn't go anywhere, right? Because he was in a wheelchair, although he did get around. He didn't get in the presidency till March back then. Even though the election was in, imagine that, Ricky. You don't get the job for like 5 months. Anyway, they said he had people came to see him every 20 minutes or half hour for like 5 months from all walks of life. Because, you know, you didn't have the news media like you do now. If you wanted to find out what's going on in the world, you had to talk to people. So I kid all these guys going down there and the stock keeps going up. I don't really think it's a bad do for politicians to talk to people. I really don't.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I don't think so either.
We used to, I don't know if I ever told you
this. What, they got barbers
who was that, Joel?
Yep.
I thought he left.
Oh, that starts. That starts tomorrow.
Oh, all right. I thought he left.
Yeah, I was.
So I don't think he realized.
Oh, yeah. He wasn't talking to you guys.
Oh,
yeah,
he's not talking to us. Oh, cool.
He's gone now.
He was trying to make a haircut appointment.
Oh god.
He's off the meeting now, though. We're good.
Okay. Kenny. Speaking about what do you make of this guy? They caught this guy, the shooter.
I think it's amazing that they caught this guy. I suspected it was going to go on for a while longer, but I'm amazed that they actually caught him. Someone in McDonald's, you know, saying that they recognized the guy from the pictures, which I think is pretty amazing that somebody did. I think those eyebrows gave it away. They were very big eyebrows, and I think the eyebrows gave away. But look. You know, it's kind of a sad statement. Here's a 26-year-old kid who was valedictorian of his high school class, went to an Ivy, another one who went to an Ivy League college and becomes completely, destroyed. Look what they've done at Columbia and at Harvard. I mean, they destroy these kids, and now he's going around, you know, shooting people because he's unhappy with the healthcare system, apparently. Somebody said, I'm waiting to see whether or not this comes out, whether or not he had a family member or someone that had
it was him.
Huh?
It was him.
His roommate
said he's had a serious chronic bad back for a long time.
I didn't know that. All I saw, though, I did see that thing on Twitter that showed an X-ray of somebody's back with three screws in it. So I didn't know whose back it was. I guess it's his, right?
Yeah, it must be. I mean, I don't know that, but I just thought the roommate said, he said he was a good guy. The only thing I can remember, he's always in constant pain. His back was all screwed up.
Oh, I got you. So then it was him.
Well, yeah. I'm assuming that. It could have been something, let's put it this way, Kenny. I jumped to that conclusion. Maybe shouldn't.
Yeah, no. Maybe you're right. I wasn't. You're right. Maybe you're right. But, geez, if his back is sore now, just think about what it's going to be like when he's in prison.
Well, two people from my neighborhood that went to Ivy League schools, you never guess who one of them was. The Unabomber.
The Unabomber, right. So there we go.
And,
right?
And the other one was a guy across the street from me who came. He went to Harvard and came back. I don't know if he went to law school or not. Didn't really have a job. Lived with his parents and one day blew his parents away with a shotgun. So those are two people from my hood that went to Harvard out my door.
Yeah, I hear you. It's crazy. But anyway, so I think it's amazing that they caught this kid. And, you feel bad for the guy that got shot and his family and all that stuff. But I think it's amazing. I was really curious how he shot him. It was in the dark. He jumped on a bike. He got away. I'm surprised that he even got away, but he did, on a bike, no less, and then found himself in Altoona, Pennsylvania, where some girl just says, yeah, that's him.
Well, I got a call the other day. Is this, with a picture, and said, is this really that Kenny Polcari, the star of TV in my McDonald's? You're all over.
That's baloney, because I have McDonald's in a lot.
That's because I'd never be in McDonald's.
No, I go to the drive-up window.
Okay. Well, where can we push? I just read, I don't want to bore you with it, but I just read this thing earlier, a quote from Vladimir Lenin, of all people, about how inflation totally destroys the capitalist system. It destroys people who owe versus people who lend. It totally screws up the whole capitalist system. And it looks to me like we're going right back into this inflationary I won't say spiral, because we're only talking a little over 5% a month money supply growth, but we're going right back into it, Kenny. I mean, that's why the market keeps going up every day, in my opinion. And now, are they really going to do this to us again?
Yeah, no, listen, and I think we're going to find that out tomorrow. We're going to get the CPI, which is expected to be hotter, right, than last month, right? And PPI, which was already hotter last month, is expected to be hotter again. So, to me, that just screams, you guys better slow down and be cautious, which is what Jay Powell told us last week. But yet when he told us that, the market was pricing in a 70% chance of a rate cut. Now it's pricing in a 90% chance of a rate cut. So these guys, these swaps traders, are basically, ignoring what Jay Powell says about going slow and maybe we need to take our time and blah, blah, blah. And they're ignoring what the data is telling you. And they're still saying we demand a rate cut. And now there's not. And so someone's going to be disappointed. Well, if he cuts, I'm going to be disappointed because I don't think he should. And if he doesn't cut, all these trader types that are betting 90% chance that we're getting it, they're going to be disappointed, right?
Well, Kenny, you and I have this, I won't say a little bit of a disagreement, or one of our few spots, is that you're kind of a believer in these guys and what they say. Don't take that wrong, please. But I just look at what they do. And there's no way the guy is going to start pouring over 5% money into the system. If he pours the money in, the short-term rates are going to go down until people realize how much inflation there is. They're going to go down. They're already down. Whether he decides or he tells you he's cutting it or not, they're already there. He's already done it.
Correct.
He's just matching shit up. It's not like he's going along in one way where everything's even and the Fed funds rate matches what he says it is. And the next day he says, I'm changing policy and I'm going to start pushing it down. He's already pushing it down.
Right.
So I don't get the delay or of all the gnashing of teeth about the announcement. It's already happening.
Yeah. No, I hear you. Did you see what Biden did this morning? Or at least I just heard that it's happening. I don't know if it happened yet, but it's he's forgiving more student debt today.
Well, I don't. How do we get the solution on this, Kenny? I'll ask you, because I don't know the answer. Nothing is burying this country more than the student debt. Now, you and I should, if we were in the Oval Office, maybe the second thing I do, or the first thing I would do, I'd grab five idiots from both sides of the aisle and drag them and kidnap them down to Camp David and said, here's the student loan problem. Right, we can't have the moral hazard where we forgive everybody that's not paid and the guys versus the guys who did pay. We got to do this in a rational manner. Yeah, we can't have every 25-year-old in the world running around with $250,000 debt, never be able to get a house, never be able to get a car. We can't do that either when these colleges charge an exorbitant amount, way more than they're worth. So how I think there needs to be a fix. The idea that somehow the Republicans are all against any kind of fix just because the Democrats want to forgive some stuff. Somewhere in the middle here, there's a solution, I think. And I don't know what that is, but maybe you lower everybody's interest rate retroactively for 10 years, and the people who paid it off, you send them a check. You do something where everybody feels like they're not the poor stooge that paid versus the guy who doesn't. I don't think you can do that. But I also think you need to be able to pile it into bankruptcy. There's ants where the guy's dead and they're on the hook because they co-signed for it. I mean, you got to get rid of that, right? I mean, the idea that if you're in disability, you can't discharge it in bankruptcy, really? I mean, come on. I mean, somewhere there's a solution. I'm not smart enough to have it, but it's not one side saying we're going to forgive it and the other side,
right.
Where does that put us, Kenny? Nowhere.
No, I hear you. I hear you. It puts us nowhere, which is why there has to be someone better start paying attention and figure out how to fix this problem, because it's going to be a big problem, right? It is. We can't go on like this for sure.
Well, for a long time, we were charging kids 6% when the rates were like 1.5%.
Yep.
We're going to scalp our own next generation?
Well, that's what they were doing.
Yeah.
Right? That's what they were doing. Which I also think, you know, they instituted the program. They wanted kids to go to school, and then they try to scalp them when rates are, like you said, were 1%. So that was wrong, for sure. But does that mean you forgive the debt that these kids impose, or do we then take the haircut on what you're charging them?
Whatever you do, you make it even.
Right. You make it even. But forgiving the debt, I don't think is making it even.
Well, I think if it's, like, if the person's disabled or dead and it's something that could be discharged in bankruptcy but can't, that's a different. We have a lot of those people too, Kenny.
Okay, well, that's fine. So somebody, I agree, but that's a different. But if you get somebody who's healthy, who's out there working, who's chosen, or maybe they've chosen to go, oh, I want to go traveling for a while and I don't want to go to work and I'm not going to pay the bill, that's bullshit.
Well, right? I agree.
That's baloney. So if you get somebody who's gone it, they've taken the money, they've gotten their education, they better go out and get a job and look to pay it back, because that's how you honor yourself, right? You borrow money, you pay it back.
I don't disagree. I'm just saying that these colleges are charging 75. If they were charging 30, this wouldn't be a problem.
Well, okay, and I agree with you there, but part of the reason that they, I think part of the reason, is because the money was made so available that they just started raising their rates. I mean, look, I sent my daughter, it was already 12 years ago, she went to Vanderbilt from 2008 to 2012. And at that time, it cost me $65,000 a year. And that plus the travel back and forth, plus all the other baloney.
Yeah, right? Oh yeah.
Hey, I think it's closer to 100 before you even get on an airplane to go there. Right?
Yeah, that number is ridiculous.
Right, it is ridiculous. It's 1,000%. And listen, had a great time, it was a great education, all that stuff. I think they listen, I have my own comments. I think that they it's a left-leaning school, which is not where I am, but it is what it is. But yeah, I think they're charging way too much. I think they all are. I think it's ridiculous.
Well, but it also reaches the point where our room and board was 1,000.
Yeah,
it's going back a ways. But then you went to the dining hall, you know, and nobody died. The food was pretty good. You know,
nobody died.
The food was pretty good. You had, you know, a couple choices per night. You know, all that stuff. Well, then all of a sudden you start charging. I think Northwestern, last time I looked, I think room and board's like 17. I got news for you. If I'm paying 17, I'm not going to take a leak down the hall. and oh, by the way, I'm not eating chicken every night. Now you should see the dining hall at Notre Dame now. There's the Sunday bar, there's a Mexican food bar, there's a salad bar. I mean, but you can't, the costs balloon up to how much you're paying.
Right. And then they give you days off in therapy because you don't like how the election went. So you need to come to therapy and let us talk to you about it. Come on.
Really?
Yeah, come on.
Well, I'm saying there's people living in my building, good friends, and they both went to, I think their college, that's, you know, $180,000.
Yeah.
You know, and the guy's got a good job. He's making, you know, whatever. He's a, you know, he does some stuff for not gaming, but does something computer. I have no idea what he does. You know me and computer programming. I'm going to say he's making 50.
Yeah.
And he's paying, you know, $2,200 a month to live. He has a car. He's got to take the L back and forth to work. He's got to have some clothes. He's got to eat.
Yeah.
How the hell are you paying off $180,000 after that?
Yeah. Well, I hear you. It's tough. I get it. But they put themselves in that position and they borrowed all that money, and so you have to figure it out. Right. Well, when you're 20 years old, you have to figure it out. At 25 years old, you have to figure it out. Maybe you ought to get two jobs. You're bartending at night. Or you're doing something else. You did it. I did it. We all did it.
Well, the only difference, Kenny, for guys our age, and I won't not accuse you of being as old as me, the world was sort of different. Every year, if you were to take, say these guys graduated from school at, 2024, say they graduated in 2015.
Yeah.
I'm going to say their salary on the job that they're making is up 15%, maybe 20 total since 2015, when everybody's expectation was, and I'll bet their expenses are up 50 to 60. That didn't happen when we graduated school.
Yeah, no, that did not happen. You're right. That did not happen when we graduated school, that's for sure. So I understand that, but I think that something has to be done, right? They have to either we've got to somehow figure out how to bring those costs down and all that stuff, which is not going to happen very easily, especially if you
stop giving those loans out the way you were giving them, like they were right. Water, that'll bring these costs down in a second.
But you have to stop giving out those loans,
right? I got no problem with that.
Yeah, well, no, I don't have a problem with it either. So let's see if that's what they do.
Well, I mean, if why?
Then watch how fast the price of the education comes down.
Well, let me ask you this: if again, you know, I'm sort of a pure. I'm not. Hal's going to be on in a bit. He's Mr. Pure Economist. I started out that way, Kenny, but now the government's evolving so much, you can't be pure in one spot.
Right.
You know, it's like what the guy say in a Boardwalk Empire: "Nucky, you can't be half a gangster. you either are or you aren't." The idea that the colleges give out and all do this stuff for the loans, I think the colleges should just be colleges. They should just charge whatever they charge. And if you and I feel like borrowing money from them, that should be the bank's job or some other else's job. When you start yoking this together, it's the craziest thing in the world. You go to a college and you say, well, what's the tuition? Well, I don't know. How much you got? Well, duh. That's not my America. You and I don't go in and buy a scotch tonight. The guy goes, well, how much you got before I tell you how much it is? You know, right? If we're going to borrow it, that's the credit card company's job, not the bartender's.
Yeah, correct.
I mean, it's, you know, let's get this back together where if somebody is going to go get a student loan, maybe you go get it from a bank and your dad co-signs it for you or something. The colleges, the more loans they give, the more they can charge. That's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I hear you.
But how are we ever going to turn this bus around? I mean, how can we possibly?
It's going to be. I think it's going to be very difficult because we've gone well past the point where, you know, I think we've lost control in some parts. Which, by the way, maybe helped with this new. You know, when we talk about Doge, you talk about cutting the deficit. You talk about looking for waste. I think you have to start there. I think the country is ready to go through this process and figure out where we're wasting all this money because you have to start somewhere. So.
You're over a little bit, but that's okay. This kid went and shot this guy. This kid, well, he's 26.
Yeah.
Now, what is at some point these insurance companies, a lot of these bureaucracies, they love screwing people. They love screwing people. And I'm not saying this guy who got shot was one of those people, but how many people in Florida? I know people that have not got anywhere near a settlement from where they used to live. Where the hell are they supposed to be living this whole time for 2 years after the hurricane? The one on the west side, the one at, like, where...
What did you say?
It's like the hurricane in Florida 2 years ago.
Yeah.
I know people, they haven't told them whether they're going to fix the building or whether they're going to not fix it. Or,
right. There's still, there's
where the hell are they living? But it's unoccupable. Can't live there.
Right. Which I think is, which I still think is bullshit too. That they, that these people go through this and they have the insurance and do that, and they still don't have an answer on what's happening.
Well, so where are they living? What if right. they're broke now? Their kids are at some point. Correct. At some point, when do you say? When do you snap? Hopefully, it's never where you actually got to shoot somebody. But
this kid, but you see, this kid at 26 year old, he snapped. Right? He snapped. Yeah. Stand it anymore, whatever, whether he was in pain or whatever it was, or he felt like he was being taken advantage of by the insurance companies. They don't you know, you pay for insurance and then they question the care you need. Yeah. Right. Which I think is a whole nother conversation that we need to have in this country about healthcare. Right. And for anybody that's got healthcare issues, it's a real problem. Right.
And well, it's a huge problem.
Yeah, and apparently this kid, it was a real problem for him, you know? I guess I'm going to learn more as over the next couple of days.
Well, one of the guys is, and I don't know if this is, I think this might be true, but I don't know. I didn't check it. The idea that these places are now in these cities, Chicago is broke. I mean, they have flat-ass broke.
Chicago's bankrupt.
Well, but now you've got Northwestern University that keeps buying up buildings, and it's its own city, Kenny, for God's sake.
Yeah.
Somebody was telling me their tax stat, that they don't pay their water bill. How does a city, how do you attract these kinds of places? They buy up places that are paying taxes and they don't pay. How do you get ahead with that?
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know how they get away with that.
But how, right? So if Northwestern triples by the size, there'll be nobody paying taxes in the whole downtown area? I mean, for God's sake, how does that work?
Yeah, well, it doesn't, and you know how it's so funny because your governor there, what's his name,
Pritzker,
you know, he becomes so defiant. It's just amazing to me. Like I sit here and watch him, and I think to myself, you know, what world does this guy live in?
You know what? He has improved the finances of the state since he's been in there by light years.
Has he?
Oh yeah, not the mayor, the governor. Governor's no dummy.
Well, okay, but if he's improved the finances of the state, how come the state is still bankrupt?
Well, he has issues with the pension stuff that he didn't do.
Right.
The pensions are beyond. But we'll talk about that maybe next week. The pensions are crazy.
Yeah.
And then there's that's why they can't get a constitutional convention, because the people are they're going to change the pension law. So if you cheat them, if you find some way where there's all kinds of people are getting two pensions.
Yeah,
I mean, it's nuts. All that stuff's got to stop.
It's got to stop. Well, but
it's not going to, because in the Constitution it says you can't. There's a line in there that says you can't. What's the word? You can't deflate somebody's pension. The idea being, you could threaten a judge to drop his pension. You know, so it's in the Constitution. You can't. But it didn't. It didn't. You know, guys that work for the the mayor worked for the Chicago Teachers Union. He taught for maybe 1 year, then was an activist for them, and they count that as teaching. He's going to get a pension.
Yeah.
I mean, what the bleep?
Yeah, no, I hear you.
All right. Hey, have fun at that conference.
Yeah, well.
All right. You sound great. Good for you. And
thank you.
Well, we'll talk at you next week, bud.
Bye-bye.
SP Futures up 4, NASDAQ Futures up 44. Do we have Professor?
Yes, we do.
Hey, how are you? Sorry to keep you waiting, bud.
Yep. That's all right. I'm waiting for my audio ear examination at the VA Medical Center.
Yeah.
So I'm calling you from the parking garage in Durham, North Carolina.
Well, are you gonna be able to hang in there for a
while?
I made
an appointment at 9:30.
At when?
What's that?
When's your appointment?
9:30.
All right, so you're out of here a half hour early?
No, I'm already at the hospital, so it'll only take me 5 minutes to walk inside the building.
All right, hey, all kinds of stuff going on. There's an article here. Just real, were you listening earlier? Did you hear my quote from Lenin? You're here, one of your heroes.
Yeah.
Pretty scary. Huh? Nothing changes, does it?
Well, it's not personally. It's not one of my heroes, but the guy is pretty pragmatic. I think when he took power, the inflation continued, and he was willing to scale back his communism. Stalin, I don't think Stalin appreciated it, but Lenin was pragmatic enough to kind of scale it back a little. Stalin took power.
Armin Hammer said Lenin and Roosevelt were the two smartest men he ever met.
Well, I think he needed to talk to Ludwig von Mises too.
I should know. Where the hell's Ludwig? How did Lenin die? Did somebody kill him, or nobody knows?
I think it's kind of hard to trust anything that came from the Soviet state back then. But I suspect, Stalin probably. I mean, the guy was a pretty brutal dude.
Yeah.
Probably as bad or worse than Hitler.
I'm gonna say worse. I think he killed more people than Hitler. Yeah. And it wasn't as targeted, but because he's killed everybody.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's better or worse, but
I wouldn't be shocked if Stalin offed him.
Yeah, I wouldn't. That's
why these dictators. It's the reason why these dictators live in a constant state of fear, right? They all live in a constant state of fear. Putin lives in a constant state of fear. He thinks the general that's sitting next to him poisoned his food, right? He has food tasters. Well, and this is not a recent phenomenon. It goes back thousands of years. Pharaoh feared, feared losing power, right? He's having these nightmares, and he hears about this guy named Joseph. And Joseph can interpret dreams, right?
Yeah.
So the guy gives the gun to Joseph. And what does Joseph do? He uses his newfound power and he takes 20% of the grain from an economy that is 86% agriculture. So he imposes a tax of 20%. And then, if you compound that over, if you're talking about people living at subsistence levels, which most people were back then, only the very, very wealthy.
Hey, I got news for you. Most people are now. Worldwide.
Yeah. So if you impose this tax of 20% on the single largest part of the economy, which is 86% of the economy, of course you're going to have a famine in, 7 years, right? But why did Pharaoh fall for this? Why did Pharaoh do it? Because he lives in a constant state of fear. Stalin lived in a constant state of fear.
Well, plus you must feel like you're totally trapped.
I mean, I think you do. Yeah.
I mean, even Versailles had to be getting pretty small if you can't leave it, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think they do. I think that these celebrities that have all this wealth and fame and whatnot, I think deep down inside, they're alone. I think they're lonely and I think they come to the realization that people only love them because of their celebrity and their money.
Well, right? If you live in a one-bedroom and you can walk down the block to the bar, it's not so bad. But if you live in a house that's the whole size of a block and you can't leave, it's jail.
Yeah, yeah. Unless you it's a really nice jail. It's a really nice jail.
Hey, a question for you. And we got all kinds of stuff here to talk about, for God's sake. Do you know a lot about... Well, one of the things we want to touch on is this, what's going on down in Florida with the condos and the assessments and all that stuff. But the other thing is what's happened in Syria this week. We've talked a little bit about it, but Lou is going to talk a lot about who the players are and all this kind of stuff. I mean, there's all kinds of groups that are involved over there, right?
I've heard the CIA is on one side and the DOD is on the other.
That could be.
Yeah.
But the guy's in there. Assad's out. Assad was about as brutal as they get. Today I was hearing about how they're letting people out of the jails, and a lot of them are Americans, and how many people are all tortured and stuff in there and whatever. But the guy who is taking over is He started out not liking America very much. Was he like an ISIS or one of those places? Now he seems to have mellowed and wants to actually be a real ruler. The area has been an economic cesspool for like a long time. The Israelis, with our help, now I'll just say what happened. The Israelis, with our help, have pretty much decimated Hamas and Hezbollah, which means and the Russians were kept Assad in power. This time they didn't, maybe because they can't, because they're involved in Ukraine.
Yeah, they can't. They're embroiled in that.
So now all of a sudden you have this new, whatever you want to call it, I shudder to call it Syria country, because the lines were drawn after World War One, like a lot of the places over there, without regard to the people there and whether they get along. But now, is there a chance?
In America.
Was there a chance with this all, with Iran seemingly more out of the picture, that the economy, economically, the area could pick up Gaza, Lebanon, and Syria over the next 10 years to the point where it becomes less of a problem. Is it possible? I guess, and you're an economist.
It depends on who's the new leader of Syria. And in the Middle East, history has shown us that when the United States is behind an effort to depose a leader they don't like, more likely than not...
I don't think we supported this guy. We don't. Did we? I doubt it.
Obama has wanted Assad out.
What?
We knew that.
Everybody did. Everybody wanted his old man out. They've been there for 50 years being idiots.
And the American public pushed back on that. But any time in history where we support taking out some foreign leader in the Middle East, it seems like the guy that takes over is worse.
I have not heard that we were behind this guy. Matter of fact, I think he didn't like us at all.
I think if we dig enough, I mean, Assad was an ally of Russia. Russia's the new, Nazi regime. They're allied with Iran. I'm not going to be surprised if somehow we were involved in knocking him out.
I don't think we supported him. I don't think we went against him either. But I guess my question is, does Syria, Lebanon, can there be an economy that it somehow arises out of this that's somewhat real? Where people actually have jobs and grow stuff?
It just depends on who's running the show. I mean, in the West Bank, you had, 50% unemployment?
Yeah, Gaza the same way.
In Gaza, you had 50% unemployment, and in the West Bank, you had about 14%. The West Bank didn't attack Israel. Gaza did.
Right.
October, 7th?
Yeah.
So you had this high unemployment. And why did you have this high unemployment? Gaza should be an economic marvel because it's right there next to the Mediterranean Ocean.
They have no ports, not one.
Yeah, but their location is incredible, right? They could build hotels. They could build maybe casinos. They could build, but they don't. Why? Because the government that ran Gaza, the authority that ran it, didn't protect people's property rights. And the same kind of thing happens in San Francisco. The same kind of thing happens in New York City. People's property rights aren't protected, and you have stores closing up in San Francisco. You have the Rite Aids throughout Brooklyn closing up because people go in there and they steal. And then for the ones that aren't shut down, it takes an hour for you to get the deodorant out of the locked cabinet.
Yeah.
Because of the high crime. So it's no wonder that these places go away because the local government is not protecting people's property rights. And so for Syria and Lebanon to be an economic engine, the government that replaces whoever, was leading it before, it has to protect people's property rights. It does. And if they don't do that, it's going to be a mess. That's the basic tenet of government, protecting people's property rights.
Well,
part of that is the income we earn from our labor. When the government takes 80% of your income, it's not protecting your property rights because your labor is your property. You own yourself. Right.
Well,
my body, my choice.
You buried. I'm going back a few years because it's allegedly fixed, though I don't know totally. Go back a few years. I used to see people. Not that I was ever hanging around on the Best Buy, but I used to see people look at a TV, get out their phone, and order one online and not pay taxes.
Yeah.
And the state allowed it to happen. Here's people paying you taxes, and you're letting people go around them and not pay sales taxes. I don't know. And I've never seen one person prosecuted on that. Is that because like the governor's wife bought 5 TVs over online? I mean, are they?
Well, I think the argument to get out of sales tax is that we didn't have a brick and mortar store, we weren't using government, we weren't using state resources. I mean, that was their legal argument. Now, do I agree with it?
Yeah, no. But there is maybe there's an economic legal argument in somebody's mind, like maybe yours.
I remember that being like Amazon argument. We don't have brick and mortar stores.
The
water, we're not using.
I know what their argument was, but I also know that the law, and I looked this up for a show when we first started, the law is you have to, there's actually a form that you have to send to the state at the end of the year and say, I bought this stuff somewhere else and didn't pay taxes on it.
Yeah.
And if it's over like $1,000, you got to do it quarterly.
Yeah.
It was never like, it's not really a law. Yeah, it is.
Well, I think in those situations, the consumer is responsible for paying the sales tax, but you know they're never going to really admit to what they purchase, right?
Well, I mean, what if I think they should have, in my opinion, when the state's broke, you know, I'm not. I think you know me well enough to know I want to get rid of half the laws,
right? Yeah.
Maybe more than half, but the ones that we care about, you know, I don't think I shouldn't have to pay more at my local. You know, I would say use the term Marshall Fields. You shouldn't have to pay 10% when somebody grabs it from another state and breaks the law and gets the thing cheaper. Because not only are you hurting me, you're hurting the Marshall Fields.
Well, the politicians are just as bad as everybody else because I don't know if you remember this, but some politician drove across the border out of Massachusetts to buy a bunch of liquor. When we came back into the state of Massachusetts, they busted the guy for avoiding paying Massachusetts sales tax on the liquor that he purchased in a different state. John Kerry, the senator, he parked his boat in an island that was attached to a different state so it could avoid paying Massachusetts luxury tax. So politicians are guilty of doing
well,
the
I mean,
same
I, thing. The sales tax, I don't really have a, you know, an issue. I mean, I don't think I do. If I buy stuff for the office at the Myers in Homer Glen, where maybe the sales tax or the gas there, the gas tax is, you know, 4 cents cheaper than in Chicago. I'm at least paying it for Homer Glen. It's not like I'm having it delivered to the 5 gallon can comes to my front door with nothing and I pour it in the car. I mean,
well, Washington, Oregon's really interesting because Oregon doesn't have sales tax. Washington State does. And when I was a kid, I remember driving to Tri-Cities, Washington from north central Oregon with my mom. We'd go there and shop and then she'd show her like Oregon driver's license. And we wouldn't have to pay sales tax in Washington. Well, the thing is, the people in Washington knew that you didn't have to pay sales tax in Oregon. So they would go south of the border and buy goods and then take them back to Washington State, which is completely illegal.
Well, I mean, it gets to the point where everybody... The one guy... The problem with these kind of laws, these kinds of things, is when you end up sigging a law on somebody, it's so uneven that it's not even fair.
Yeah,
the guy who was I think the guy was kind of a sleazebag, but he was.
Well, the more laws you create, the more criminals you create because sometimes the laws contradict each other, right? So you just impose all these laws and restrictions and regulations, and people are probably going to be breaking laws and federal rules every day and they don't even know it.
But how hard would it have been? Yeah, I don't know legally, for the state to say to Amazon, "Hey, look, I want." The list of the top 500 people who bought crap from Illinois last year and didn't pay any taxes.
Yeah.
Now, who's...
Well, I think that would have
read like a who's who of all the big shots in the state, probably.
Yeah. So I think it was at a time when Amazon was losing money. I mean, because they lost money, what, for 10, 15 years?
I think that paying taxes would put them on the map.
Yeah.
I think getting the $9 billion from the government has put Tesla on the map.
Oh, yeah, government is the source of all these kinds of advantages that these firms get, right?
Yeah, I mean...
Sometimes government will allow people to issue a competitor's veto and say, hey, we don't want the competition. We don't need duplicity in service. I mean, can you imagine McDonald's? The outrage that would generate if McDonald's was using these competitor's vetoes to keep Burger King from opening up in a hamburger joint across the street? I mean, people would be outraged.
Well, how many... I'm going to say fast food probably... is one of the few competitive industries left in our society. I can't name 10, can you?
Yeah, it's crazy. Well, I think things like electronics and entertainment and gaming and computers is relatively
okay. There's four. I'm saying when you start using fingers and toes, it's hard to name them.
Well, you can find them if prices are coming down and quality's going up, and there's no problems with access or quantity demand or quantity supply. If output's rising, quality's increasing, and prices are coming down, you know that market's pretty relatively...
Well, any kind of agriculture is competitive. Yeah. I'm going to say a lot of the services are, you know...
Well, I don't know about that. I've been reading about seeds. Have you heard about the seeds where Monsanto owns the seed that farmers...
Oh, yeah. I'm talking about the farms themselves, like the price of corn, the price of wheat, and that kind of thing. Yeah, well, right. Monsanto, where they... You can't make seeds out of the seeds they sell you?
Yeah, you buy the seed from Monsanto, and you sign an agreement where when you harvest your grain, you can't set aside some of your grain for next year's crop.
Not only that, if some of it blows across the way to some old guy's farm and he uses
the cross pollinates,
they'll go after the guy.
Yeah.
And win. And you know, if you know, bring big lawyers in and they win. Yeah, but yeah,
Monsanto's got a government created monopsony, right?
Well, just because I think the industry somewhere is fair doesn't mean there isn't a little piece of it that, I mean, I'm gonna say that you know, barbers and hairstylists and so forth, I'm saying that's competitive. That doesn't mean there isn't one brand of shampoo that isn't, you know, hasn't cut a piece. But there, you know, there's not a whole hell of a lot.
Farming for the small farmer, family farmer, is a brutal business. Because if you like my parents, before their divorce, when they bought their farm in Bruno, Idaho, they unwillingly or unknowingly, and they didn't have a very good lawyer. They probably didn't have a lawyer. They signed the contract and they assumed the previous farmer's debt. I mean, talk about intentionally trying to create a system where the little guy gets crushed, right? And they end up when they went bankrupt, and their lawyer advised them to get divorced. I think the lawyer actually wanted to date my mom, but he advised my parents to get divorced.
I'm not so sure I want to go to Idaho.
So they got divorced, and they were living together. But my mom always was very disgruntled with my father. He was very abusive in my teens, and when he was in his 20s and 30s, very abusive man. And ironically, he was one of the nicest guys you would ever come across when he was in his 40s and 50s. Just the nicest, most genuinely nice guy, and everybody just loved the guy. But in his 20s and 30s, he was a monster.
Yeah.
But she used it as an opportunity to get out of the marriage, right? She told him to take a hike when he moved her into an apartment complex in Borden, Oregon. She was in town. She didn't, you know, I mean, going back to your earlier segment where you have these women who are, you know, being the homemakers and the daycare providers in those families that you're talking about when you went to school. My mom did that, but my dad always had her in the middle of nowhere where she couldn't just like say, I've had enough of the abuse, I want a divorce. What is she going to do? She has no car.
Oh, yeah, you got nowhere to go. You got no escape.
She's in a trailer in suburban McDermott, Nevada, which is a ghost town called Davytown. McDermott has got a gas station.
Was there even a stoplight? Are you there?
There wasn't even a stoplight. There was a stop sign.
All right, there you go.
Right. It was just an intersection in a road. Yeah, after the divorce, though, and they moved to Borden, Oregon, we were living in an apartment complex, she just said, hey, you got to go. And he left.
So, well, it's a... Well, a lot of those old marriages stayed together because they were economic, and they were designed. It was so screwed up.
Oh yeah, they were economic. Yeah,
it was so screwed up when people. My uncle had a job. He was he would install one of the most fascinating machines you ever see is a printing press. They were actually going to a place where those things are working, like for newspapers and magazines. It's unbelievable the complexity of those things, and there's like. All different kinds of paper that you get, there's like 200 or 300 different kinds of ink for whatever kind of paper.
Yeah.
Anyway, so he would put those things together and he'd fix them. And on weekends, if he left for a weekend, you got like double time the whole weekend, and it was made a lot of dough. They would send your regular check home, and they would send the overtime check just to the guy, so the wife didn't know how much he made overtime. I mean, it was. Bizarre world. I mean, I remember, people cashed their paycheck at the local bar. And most wives had no idea how much the guy made.
Yeah.
They got their allowance for the week I don't know any guys that were abusive, but I mean, just the system was kind of set up. And then there were women that were a little stronger.
That whole system comes from the Normans, the Norman invasion of the UK. The Normans are the ones that impose that oldest son inherits the property, right? And then the heirs could. There was a law that said the heirs couldn't sell, so that maintained the power. But that's where that, I guess you call it, patriarchy.
Actually, I think you might be wrong there, my friend, because my brother married into a family, and their from Eastern Europe. It was Croatia or some damn place. And this is what happens when you, as you age. When I was young, the grandfather died, and he gives the metal stamping place to the oldest son. Now, what didn't exactly give it to him, but he was in charge of it. Now, if he sold it, he had to split the dough up. But he was absolutely in charge of it while he was alive, or while the thing was running. And the other guys had nothing to say about it, right? And I'm thinking, God, this is so un-American, I can't believe it. That is a stink. And as I aged, yeah. I saw three or four places in the Chicago area, big family-owned businesses, like Canfield's Pop, Jay's Potato Chips, Romano Brothers Beverages, a bunch of them, where when the old man retired, somebody swooped in and said, I'll buy your place for, like, more money. And if you have, like, 7-10 kids, one of the guys is going to say, hey, your brother's running it. I don't even like your brother. Give me my $2 million. We're out.
Yeah.
You know, screw the employee.
Well, I'm not saying we have that same system. What I'm saying is that's kind of like that cultural aspect where, you know, the man was able to hide his income from his wife. It was all culturally acceptable. Yeah.
And they never even asked to read the tax return. What I'm saying is, in terms of employees, that system is way better than sell it out to a competitor and split up the dough as soon as the old man croaks.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, Canfield's is gone, Jay's is gone, Romano Brothers Beverage is gone. Yeah. All the employees are gone. You know, I mean, someone got hooked down with it. So, I mean, there's some method to the madness.
I think a lot of that changed when America adopted this corporation, because before corporations, these big large firms were these family trusts, right?
Right.
And that's how they stayed together through the years. It was a family trust. But the corporation made it possible for the founder and the primary owner of a company, for the company to survive the death of that owner, right?
Well, yeah, unless somebody came in and everybody's shareholders wanted their dough. It depends on how many shareholders there were.
Yeah, you know, the kids inherit the father's stock, like, you know, in the Walmart case, but the company survives, right?
Well, but a lot of places give the new chairman, the new CEO, a big chunk of stock, and all he wants to do is sell a place.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, you know, it happens. What's going on down in the shooting? Well, two things. I want to talk about the shooting. I want to talk about what's going on in Florida with the condos and stuff. The shooting, how many people, God, I hope they're not going to go out and start shooting people, but how many people are just totally PO'd at the insurance industry, some of these big companies, the hospital industry, the medical industry? I know people that have spent fortunes on care and have gotten, like, no care in the last year or two.
Yeah.
I mean, the hospitals are still running on COVID time, and we're not in COVID anymore in some places. How much rage is there? I think there's a lot.
Well, I think there's a lot of rage. I agree there's a lot of rage. I mean, teaching this health economics class, doing all the reading that I've done this semester, I'm shocked the prices aren't actually even higher. I mean, just the amount of monopoly power that's provided by the state, that's protected by the state, to the pharmaceutical industry, it's just unbelievable how anti-competitive the whole system is. And then on top of that, you throw in a third-party payer. Right.
Yeah, it makes it worse.
Think about a third party payer. Your parents are rich parents are a third party payer for textbooks for college students.
Yep.
Do you know how much a textbook costs today?
It's got to be $100.50.
Oh, it's $300-$400, Tom.
Really?
For a textbook, yeah, maybe even $500 now. It's unbelievable that these textbooks have gotten this expensive, and it's probably because the parents who are wealthy, right? They're probably the third party payer in this whole thing, or the third party payer is federal student loans.
Yeah, it's a loan.
Where, you know, yeah, federal student loans, and the kid's not paying the tuition. They're not paying their tuition. They're getting a student loan to pay their tuition and their books, and their loans are subsidized. So they're not paying the interest. They're not having to make that payment every month until they graduate. So they're just putting it on credit card, essentially, right? But the textbooks are out of control.
I'm thinking when I was in school, they were in the $20 range, and people thought that was nuts. In grad school,
yeah.
There was only one that was $40, and it was the smallest book in the group. It was only you know what this means. Integer programming and network flows. What possessed me to take that course? I have no idea.
Well, it sounded cool. You thought maybe the chicks would dig it.
Yeah. You know, you even know what it is?
Yeah, I have an idea what it is. Yeah, it's probably like a linear programming class.
Well, it's advanced quadratic programming, but the answers always have to be in integers because you can't show up with half a pilot.
Yeah, it's like linear optimization, right?
Yeah, but the big problem was is everything's got to be an integer.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
You can't come up and with 1.2 pilots.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And the solver tool on Excel allows you to do integer solutions with your linear programming. Yeah. Well, I had this real analysis textbook, and it was a 2-semester course, but the book was only like a half inch thick. The only numbers in this math book were the page numbers and the definition numbers. It was all, if you just opened it up and looked at it, you would think you're reading Egyptian hieroglyphics. It was that complex. And I remember the book being over $100 at the bookstore. And this is when the internet was really small. And there was a website called bestbookbuys.com, and I was able to buy it used for like $20. And I thought that was a good deal.
Our friend Kevin, who's on the show, used to be the IT guy at Best Books. He was Better World Books.
Oh, World Books, yeah. Best Buy was great. It got bought out by somebody. I don't know what happened to it.
Hey, what is going to be the end game of what's going on in Florida with all these? Do they still have?
I hear it's pretty bad. I read an article about all the Airbnb homes and apartments, probably even condos that are in violation of probably the HOA laws. I think with the insurance, you know, insurance prices are probably going up with the recent hurricanes that have gone through. You got the interest rates that are really high. If you want to buy a condo or a home, maybe wait a year and maybe that bubble will really burst, right? Because I think we have another housing crisis coming along, and this time it's going to be even worse because the last time I looked at the home price index, it was like twice as tall as it was back in 2006 and 7.
I was going to say it's way worse than 2007.
Yeah, way it is. Worse. It's twice as tall. The index is now, what, I don't know, 380, 400, and it was like 180 back then.
Yeah.
And it wants to come down, but every time it starts to come down, the Fed just starts injecting more money. And you can see the money that the Fed is injecting with just all the margin debt. The margin debt, if you look at the correlation of the S&P 500 and margin debt, I bet the correlation is probably, you know, 0.85 or higher.
Whenever it gets to a top, it's always a top in margin debt, too, it seems.
Yeah. So you have all this money the Fed is printing. And right now, with interest rates being as high as they are, I think really the only people are able to leverage these kind of purchases are people at the high end, at the 1%.
What Hal is talking about, and this is not 2007, it's 2000. I'm looking at the debtclock.org. Now, this median income number I'm going to give you is median income across the population. It's not median full-time income. If you actually are working full-time, it's higher than this. It's 39.8, so say 40,000. I think the number is if you actually are working full-time, I think it's more like probably 45, 46. But in median income in 2000, not 2007 or 8, was 32,000. So say we're up 20%. Is that a fair number, 20 to 22%? Median new home now, 398. Median new home then, 168. So we were up 2.5 times, or 1.5 times, 150% on a home price, and we're up, say, 25% on the income, which is danger, Will Robinson, you know, from the old show. But now, my question is, there was a place, and I'm not big on, you know, condo law or anything like that, but our friend Robin, again, who almost a year anniversary of her death coming up in a couple of weeks, but she bought a place on Sheridan Road right by Belmont. Well, down the block, and they had a few issues with an older building, a condo conversion, they used to call them, where these firms would come in there and they'd convert it and they'd tell you all the stuff they did. They wouldn't tell you all the stuff they didn't do, right? But that place wasn't bad. They had a couple of special assessments. Down the block on Sheridan and Briar, there was a place called The Briar. Duh, go figure. And what a gorgeous building, Hal. What a gorgeous building. But the guys who converted that place, maybe they did half the stuff they were supposed to. You know, we're talking about maybe we need a new roof. Oops. All the beautiful brickwork on the side, they've been leaking in there for so long, that all had to be tuck pointed and replaced. So we're talking massive special assessments. Sort of like what's going on, you know, down in Florida for some of these. These are the buildings where the one collapsed. This isn't even the hurricane. These are just the buildings where they're redoing all the building codes and they're giving these people all this stuff. Well, it got to the point, and this is the part I don't understand. It got to the point where if you sold the place, if you found a seller, say your condo you sold for $120,000, they were making you put $25,000 to $30,000 in escrow, the new owners, for these assessments that were as yet undefined, but everybody knew was coming down the line. Do you think that's happening in Florida, where these old people actually can sell the place, they're having to put up essentially an escape deposit?
Well, yeah, I think so, yeah.
I don't know Florida law, but I was stunned when it happened here. I haven't heard of, you know, and that was, you know, 40-some years ago. I haven't heard of it since, but does that still happen?
You know, I don't know. I mean, but I wouldn't be surprised that if it was still happening. I just wouldn't be. I mean, you look at these, the article I was looking at, it was really interesting. I think what's happened is the inflation has gotten so bad that what seemed to be a good investment, like in an Airbnb condo or an Airbnb townhouse or Airbnb, you know, home, seemed like a good idea at one point, but that inflation got so high that it really lowers the demand for wants.
Yeah, yeah.
Because the price for the needs are so high that it pushes the demand for wants down, and now you have this property with these high interest rates, and maybe Airbnb income is drying up because fewer people can afford to take that, you know, vacation to Florida. And I'm pretty sure the hotel industry, like it is in New York City, the hotel industry as a group is probably pretty hostile to Airbnb rentals in Florida, just like they are in New York. I mean,
they are anywhere.
Yeah. I see these ads from the Hospital Association linking terrorists to Airbnb. Like, the 9/11 terrorists didn't stay in hotels.
Yeah.
You know, back, you know, in 2001, right?
I think they sort of stayed in their cars, but that's another story.
Yeah. So I think there's a squeeze on the revenue side. There's all these Airbnbs out there. The more Airbnbs you get, you're going to get the demand spread out across a larger number of Airbnb units, right? So just the fact that people are maybe buying these Airbnb units, that alone is going to cannibalize sales, because you have the same number of sales spread across more and more properties. And, you know, you got people upside down in these properties now. And that's a new aspect that wasn't around back in 2006 and 2007.
I'm going to interrupt just for a second, Hal, because what you just talked about, the demand for needs and wants, to the listeners, Hal is being specifically correct, which virtually nobody else in the world ever is, regarding demand. Demand is not a number, it's a curve.
Yep.
So when Hal is saying that, say you've got, you know, nights out with the boys, there's a demand curve for that. And at different prices, nights out with the boys, you're going to go different amounts of times, right? That's the quantity demanded at the cost where the two curves meet. Now, what Hal's talking about is if there's a need, if say it's your water bill, all of a sudden that just jumps by $50 a month, or say $100 a month. All the other demand places add to the overall demand curve is just dropped by a hair, because you don't have the $100. So your demand for gasoline, for, you know, new outfits, for booze, whatever it is now dropped by a little bit because you don't have it.
Yeah.
The whole curve is dropped. Not just the quantity, but the whole curve is dropped, right?
Yeah, so if the price of a want goes way up, that means you have less disposable income, which means even if the prices remain constant for a want, like a night out with the boys, or a trip to Florida in an Airbnb, that demand curve is going to shift in, and you're going to buy less of it, even though the price may stay the same.
Right.
And that's what I think is going on.
Well, so for condos, now that's different, because the condo, the building is going to have insurance, and they're going to pile it on you. But if it's a house, I mean, I'm going to say, you don't want to be a carpetbagger, but if for say somebody like us, I don't really need a place in Florida, nor do I feel like I can afford one. But the
Want it because the humidity is so high there.
Well, I'm just saying. But in say you and I were scavengers, I think what we would do is say we split a place. We find some place that used to be $400,000. Now the insurance is so high, nobody can pay the insurance. Nobody wants to live there. You and I say we'll give you $150,000 for it, and we'll just self-insure. We won't get insurance. If a hurricane comes, we're out. We're out our $150,000, and we may still get something for the lot. You say at that price, I don't give a crap. It's like getting an old car. Somebody hits it, you know, I'll have comprehensive, but I don't need collision on this junk. Same thing,
well,
right?
Well, if the two were friends before, they're probably not friends after.
Well,
right?
I'm just saying. Yeah. I mean, there's some number what you and I would say, I'll take the place and I just won't insure it. Hey, Hal, Tom, your insurance is going to be $20,000 a year. Your place is worth $400,000. Okay, well, that makes sense, I guess. But now if that guy says I'm not paying it and he pukes it out to us at $150,000, we're going to say stick the insurance where the sun don't shine. We don't need it, right?
Yeah.
I mean, is that, I guess my question, is that the end game? Is that what's going to happen to these people?
Well, I think the only way that happens is if it's an all-cash buy, right? It has to be an all-cash buy because the bank is going to get insurance for the property.
Right.
They'll secure the insurance. If you don't get the insurance and you have a mortgage, they're going to find you insurance.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Is it going to drop down to where it's all cash buy some people, just taking a shot, say if the hurricane comes back, I'm out my $150,000.
Yeah.
At some number, you'd do that, right?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, if you got that kind of cash laying around and you rolled, I mean,
that's why I've got you as my partner. That's where the cash comes in. I'll find the place. You come up with the dough.
Yeah. Well, I mean, people go to Vegas all the time, right? And, you know, they know the house wins over the long run. You know, government regulations say the house can win by a maximum of 5 cents on every dollar bet, right? So we know the house wins. But yet people go to Vegas and they'll voluntarily gamble all this money away. So I can see people doing that in Florida, right? And just rolling the dice. And hopefully they can sell it before the next hurricane comes, right?
I'm going to say there's several games in Florida
The problem with this whole scenario is rich people don't want to buy with cash. Rich people want to buy with...
Oh, sure. You want to, well, especially in an inflationary environment, you want to be all borrowed.
Well, you want to be leveraged, right? Because if it goes up 10% in the course of a year and it's 1% down leveraged purchase, you can make a 100 to 500% return on that.
Well, you just got to make sure your interest rate's less than 10.
Yeah, but if the hurricane comes in, it's all wiped away, right? So it's a roulette wheel, right? And people have been gambling forever.
Well, I just don't know what they expect people to do that the places are gone. And I don't know, I probably told you to start my, this is going to sound weird, but I shared a spot in the OEX pit with a guy for 20 years. Now you might say, how the hell do you share a spot? Well, the spot was kind of big enough for two people if you liked each other and you squeezed. Otherwise, it was just a big spot for one person. Right. So Ronnie, great guy. Ronnie go down in the morning, he trade the opening. He go to play basketball at 10 o'clock, and we had positions all around the rest of the floor, so I would work on those till 10 o'clock, and then when Ronnie left to go play basketball and go to lunch, and if he had a good morning, he'd just never come back. I'd just go stand there, and I'd stay all the way to the close, because I could never... in those days, you didn't have computers or anything like that, so all your trades, you had to kind of keep track of mentally. I could never leave and then come back. You know, I had to stay all the way to the end. So we had a great relationship. I'd trade from 10 to 3, and he traded from 8:30 to 10 or 10:30. And if it ever got crowded, wherever it was busy, we could squeeze in.
Can you imagine a young person trying to do that today?
Oh, God, no. They would have no idea.
When I was a kid, you had to remember all these phone numbers, right? You had to look it up in a phone book, or you had to remember the phone number, right? We never had a place to save the phone numbers. At least I didn't. So I just remembered all the phone numbers. When I worked for my stepfather and my mom at the Greyhound bus terminal in Lewiston, Idaho that we ran, I had the freaking Russell guide, which is an inch and a half thick, memorized. I could get people from Lewiston, Idaho to Philadelphia to Florida off the top of my head on a phone call. It was crazy.
Well, whenever we went on vacation, my mom didn't really, she wasn't a big front seat sitter. I sat in the front seat with the map. Turn here, turn there. That was my job. My stepfather would say we're going to Sturgeon Bay this year, first thing I'd do is I'd go grab the map and I'd get out the route, even in April, because I wanted, I was so anxious to go up there and play golf and do this stuff.
I love the road atlas.
I still have one at home.
Imagine myself.
I still have one at home. And if it, and if somebody, if you were to say, you know, if I'm talking and Hal says to me, I'm moving to Carolina, you know, before I go to bed, I put, it's right next to my, my bedstand. I'll pull it out and I say, what does Carolina look like? Where's he going? I get a better view looking at that than I do on the internet.
The first time I went to Portland, Oregon to visit my high school friends, they had no way, they had no idea how to get around Portland, Oregon. I got a map. I looked at the map. I looked at all the big name roads, memorized them, and then I was able to get around Portland, Oregon with no problem without even having a map.
Well, the only thing that, they, I mean, the internet is obviously good for a hell of a lot of things, but reading maps, the only people it's really, really good for are people like Audrey. Now, Audrey's perfectly capable of reading a map and everything, but we start going into these suburban with all the different cul-de-sacs and all this stuff. There was a map that real estate people, only real estate people bought. It got down to such detail, you know, with the, all, when you go to a, you know, a development, you can't tell who the hell is where in the development. These maps were that detailed. Well, I was never big on that. I mean, you're much better off getting on the internet for something like that. But just a, if you want to see, you know, what a state looks like and where, how this one's relation to that one and what roads are there, you pull out the atlas and you look at it. You, that way you can see the whole thing. I mean, right in front of you. Of course, that's just me being old. But I did mention that to we're driving somewhere with Matty Weber, my producer from way back, and he goes, "You know, you sure you know where we're going?" Because we're going to some one of his buddies. I said, "Well, there's a map in the back seat." And he goes, "A map?" I go, "Yeah, they work. Find out where the hell we're going." Well, yeah.
He opens up the map and he's trying to press with his finger.
Yeah, he's like, "What?" the one where the kids were trying to make the phone call with the dial phone. You see that thing on YouTube? Was that a riot or what? Ricky, could you use a dial phone?
Dial phone?
Yeah,
the ones that you turn around.
Yeah.
Yeah, I could use one.
See, now you're
well. You know, when I was a kid, I was impatient, and I would turn the dial to 9, and then I'd pull it back as fast as I could to get it back to 0.
That's not gonna work.
And I was pulling.
You know, when I was real, I mean, I'm really, really young. When you picked up the phone, the operator answered and you gave her the number you wanted to call.
Well, she probably knew your first name too, right?
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, this is in the city. Do you remember? Do you ever hear something called a party line?
Oh man, we had one when I was Bruno, Idaho was like 20 years behind the time, and we were on a party line with a Hagerhurst dairy and family, and 4 other families. And when I wanted to call my friend, I got on the phone and I politely interjected and said, "Mr. Hagerhurst, I need to make a phone call. How long are you going to be?" And he goes, "Hal, I'll be about 5 minutes."
You ever hear of that, Ricky? Where two people shared a phone line?
Yeah, it was more than two, I think, than we had.
Yeah, we only had two, but I mean, it's some of this, you know. I mean, obviously the stuff now is a hell of a lot better. The other question I wanted to ask is what people are expecting all these changes. When Trump comes in, what can they change? I mean, if they do some of the stuff they're talking about with the government, all right, and they if they stop giving Rashwani was talking about, they're giving this money to these hospitals for, you know, for grants for medical research and stuff, which the government does a lot of, and I'm not saying it's wrong. They're not mindful of the fact that these big places, these colossus places, put a 70% overhead on that.
Yeah,
That's too high. But what if they all of a sudden tomorrow say it's 30%? What happens to Northwestern? What happens to Sloan Kettering? What happens to these places? I mean, they gotta start firing everybody. I mean, or they're not going to do anything simple like lower the paychecks for the people up top. Then that would be the last resort. But if you force somebody to be more, it's not like you and I can build tomorrow a research facility and compete. How can we? I mean, nobody would buy that stock. Nobody would give us a loan, a bank. They'd say the government just changed their mind and give it right back to Northwestern. I mean, how do
honestly,
you...
Honestly, I don't think much is going to change.
I don't think it does.
I think maybe regulations are lightened a little bit. I think energy prices might come down further.
Why?
I think they might give out more permits to drill. Other than that, I don't really see anything happening.
Did you see any the last administration, even though if you talk to anybody, any right winger, Biden buried the oil industry.
He did.
It's just not true. We have record oil production
COVID,
right now.
COVID kind of killed it. I mean, COVID, if you look at the time series, it dropped massively during COVID.
Right.
But then it kind of recovered, and it went back on its trend that it was on before.
Well, yeah. Trump had it going up. Let's put it this way. In Trump's presidency, oil production was rocketing up until COVID. Then it, like you say, it dropped like a rock. As soon as we were done with COVID, it went right back on the trajectory that it was on when Trump was in.
And it was on an upward trajectory during the last few years of the Obama administration, too.
Yeah. I went back a lot of years. The only administration where oil production went down during was George Bush II.
Yeah.
Do you have any idea why that could be?
Well, I think what it is is George's, was sold as this oil businessman from Texas, right? Which he wasn't. He was a kid from Connecticut, or Maine, right?
Big George was real tight with the oil boys in Texas. George Senior.
Yeah.
That's how he got. That's how he got the Rangers job. The oil people bought the team and just stuck him there.
Yeah, I'm convinced that what happens is the people that are tied politically to these oil companies, these oil companies, these big ones, they don't want oil prices to drop too far. They want the oil price to be elevated because their oldest and most expensive investments don't make any money if the oil price drops below a certain level. And then, I don't know if you remember this, but George Bush II, when oil prices were at all-time highs at that point, he was buying. He doubled the strategic oil reserve at a time when oil prices had never been higher. Now, why is?
I think he had a real thing going with the Saudis too. I don't know what that was all about.
But he was buying oil at the peak. He wasn't buying oil at the bottom. He was buying it at the peak. Why? Because the guy was owned by big oil, right?
Well, I haven't checked in the last couple of weeks. Right now, we're at 13.7 million barrels a day production in this country. You know what it was when he left office?
Probably what? I don't know, 8 or 9? when who? Bush?
Second Bush. It was like 3.9.
Wow. Yeah. Wow.
So that you're right. So since the Obama administration till now, which would be 12 years of Democrats, 4 Republicans, it's gone from 3.9 to 13.6. So tell me how much the Democrats have destroyed the oil.
I do think because big tech needs energy, and they know the power grid is not sufficient, I think there could be an explosion of nuclear power plants. But by the time those nuclear power plants get online, Trump will be out of office. So I think you'll see a lot of seeds planted for these fourth and fifth generation nuclear power plants. That are,
I do too.
And what happened at
the one in Michigan and the one at.
I think they might be turned back on.
Yeah, they get turned back. That's not going to take more than about a year, is it?
Yeah, but the new ones that they need for the AI, because AI just requires so much energy. People think AI is a cost saver. I'm not sure because I don't know if you remember the chess game that Russian world champion chess player played against that IBM machine.
I guess wasn't Big Blue, it was something like that.
Yeah, something like that, right?
Yeah.
Well, the amount of power amount of energy his brain needed to play those games, and he ended up doing pretty good against the machine. The machine required this incredible amount of energy that would power up like a state. And then think about all the people behind who built that chess playing machine. Think about the century that it took to build that machine and the power that was needed to make all the calculations to play the world champion human who needed very little energy. We're talking about micro measurements of energy to battle a machine that needed the energy of like a city or a state.
Do you remember, I was running this by Carl the other day, because one of them was going to be in Chicago, and maybe it's one of the ones that was... Microsoft was going to build these massive data centers to hold everybody's cloud stuff. Remember?
Yeah.
And the one up on the north side in Chicago, northwest side, the big thing was with Commonwealth Edison because it was going to take 25% of all the power used by Mount Prospect and Displays in those places. I think they only finished the one, and then when the cloud stuff started to get easier and easier to do and they didn't need all that power, I don't think that they I think they were supposed to have 12. I wish somebody, one of the listeners, would write me something about it. I think they were supposed to be 12 countrywide, and if they finished one or two and then bagged the rest of them or something. I just wonder, by the time these guys get all this power up in line, whether AI is going to be a lot easier to do.
It probably will. So that'll be good for the American consumer, right? Because we'll have all this excess power.
Yeah.
Right? And energy prices. You know, they built this huge, massive nuclear power plant like in Norway. And it was producing so much energy that energy prices actually went negative. And so they had to scale back the nuclear power plant.
Well, it produces stuff all night. But with Chicago, we got a day show, but this big, they weren't that big, but they were a steel company right by me. Tell us the name of them. And then, the neighbors got all pissed off. Well, they needed more room. And so they moved to the south side. They had electric hearths, furnaces. You might say, why the hell would anybody do that? They ran at night. There was so much extra capacity at night with the nuclear plants here when nobody was using electricity. They got the stuff for a song at night. So when John and I would we'd go into the show at 4 in the morning, hearths are all going. You come back at noon, they're all shut down.
Okay. Just think if those hearths weren't shut down at night. Maybe the price goes negative. I don't know.
Well, I mean, it's not being used, and yet you have it. Yeah. I mean, it's like if the windmill's turning at night, it's going to go somewhere. Hal, thank you very much, buddy. We'll see you next week. It's the Wednesday people that are getting 2 weeks off with Christmas and New Year's. I don't know if I like this Christmas on a Wednesday, but what are you gonna do?
I think it's great because the vacation starts the previous Thursday.
Well, when you were a kid, it means you got 2 weeks off.
Yeah, definitely.
But because it was on a Sunday or something, they cheated you. You only got like 6 days off or something. But
I know, I hated that.
SP futures unchanged. NASDAQ futures up 8. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.